God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things.
This is Pastor Larry. Thank you for tuning in to Southwest Radio Church. The Chinese Communist Party is intensifying its crackdown on religion and religious expression in any and every form. The party has issued the 10 prohibitions on religious beliefs. It's an attempt to purify the party and weed out party members who have religious leanings. They not only bar party members from holding religious beliefs, but also provide strict guidelines for their daily lives. For example, party members are prohibited from wearing or displaying anything with religious symbols at home and work, or entering places of worship for non-work purposes, even during their work-related trip and holidays, or visiting historic or scenic sites. Meetings with religious personnel without permission are also banned. In addition, party members are banned from having private discussions and willfully spreading personal views on ethnic and religious policies and related issues. Sharing sensitive remarks about religious beliefs on social media is strictly prohibited, according to the Chinese Communist Party. A government insider said, quote, "These rigorous regulations demand Chinese Communist Party members to make a clear break with religions and keep pure ideologies," close quotes. According to a party member from Kaifeng City in the central province of Henan, six officials in his village were demanded to write personal criticisms of their own behavior. They had been discovered donating money to build a temple. Another party member had to write a similar statement because his son is Buddhist and had Buddhist flags in his home. Socialism, the dream of an ideal society? Is it a wonderful utopia, or is it a totalitarian nightmare? We're going to continue visiting with Bill Federer. He has a new book on socialism. It shows how the deep state capitalizes on crises to consolidate control. Bill, thank you so much for being with us once again.
Thank you, Larry.
Well, let's get into one of the big areas. How about the French Revolution? That failed and the American Revolution succeeded. Tell us what happened with the French Revolution.
Right. So after helping us, the French got nothing in return but debt and lots of it. Then they had a couple years where the crops failed and they blamed their king, Louis XVI, and they decided to chop off his head and his wife, Queen Marie Antoinette. Well, it didn't get any better. So they chopped off the heads of the royalty. Didn't get any better. They chopped off the heads of the wealthy. They got money we don't, and didn't get any better. Then they chopped off the heads of the farmers and businessmen. They have food and supplies we don't. It doesn't get any better. Then they chop off the heads of the hoarders, the people that have extra food stored up. They got extra. We don't have enough. They're selfish. It doesn't get any better. Then they chop off the heads of the clergy because they're preaching against all the head chopping off stuff. And then they chop off the heads of the former revolutionaries, the ones who used to chop off heads but got tired of it. 40,000 people had their heads chopped off in Paris, France. And then they, out of this, they came up with a motto, liberté, equalité, and fraternité. And these are unfortunately mutually exclusive. In other words, you cannot have all three. So liberté, liberty, we know that's an individual experience. Equality can be understood two ways. One is you're equal before the law and you have equal opportunity. But equality can also be understood as equal amount of possessions. And so the fraternity is the word for socialism. It's their collective. It's the fraternity. It's the group. And if the group thinks that you have more possessions than you deserve, you get killed. And so this is how they would chop off these heads. And anyway, so out of this chaos, you have Napoleon seizes his power. So we're back to this model where democracy without morals and virtue ends in chaos and lawlessness, and out of that comes this desire for people to want someone to restore order, and you get a king. Ancient Israel had this. As long as the priest taught the law, there was order. When the priest stopped teaching the law, every man did what was right in their own eyes, and you had sodomites banging on doors and concubines being raped, and then they all go to Samuel the prophet, and they say, this self-government system's not working. We want a king, and the rubber band snaps back with King Saul. And so let's look at Europe. After Napoleon conquered Europe, killing 6 million people in the Napoleonic Wars, The King of Prussia said, well, we can't let that happen again. We need to strengthen the state. And Germany wasn't Germany. It was a bunch of kingdoms, Prussia, Bavaria, Saxony. And so the King of Prussia got a philosopher named Hegel, George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. He's a professor at the University of Berlin. Hegel said, the state is God walking on earth. The state is our mortal God. All the worth that a person has, he has only through the state. The state is not subject to arbitrary rules of good and bad. Okay, arbitrary, you're talking about the Ten Commandments. In other words, all the state wants is power, and your life is only of value if you're serving the state. This obviously laid the foundation for Kaiser Wilhelm, World War I, and Hitler, World War II. And so, now, who was a member of a student group, a radical student group at the University of Berlin called the Young Hegelians, because they're modeling after Hegel?
That was Karl Marx, wasn't it?
Karl Marx?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so Karl Marx takes this idea that the state is God, and he develops it even more, and then you look at the tactics. Now, Hegel came up with a triangle of how to consolidate power. One corner is the thesis, the opposite corner is an antithesis or antithesis, and the top corner is a synthesis. It sounds complicated, but it's not. You start off at the first corner, that's the status quo. That's the way things are now, and everybody's pretty well settled in. You create an antithesis, you create the opposite. In other words, you create a problem that is real bad, and then everybody's happy to settle for your answer that's half as bad. And that's the synthesis, the top corner of the triangle. Then that synthesis becomes the new thesis starting point, and you create another antithesis, another problem that's real bad, and everybody's happy to settle for your answer that's half as bad. And you keep doing this over and over again, and each time the people give up a little more freedom, a little more independence, a little more of their privacy, and the government begins to consolidate more and more and more power until you move from the people ruling themselves bottom up to a dictator king ruling from the top down. And now this idea of creating an antithesis, Karl Marx says, okay, you send in agitators, agent provocateurs, provoking agents. You send in community organizers, labor organizers into a country. And at first they have to identify people groups with grievances, people that have been treated bad. They've been racially discriminated against. They're on the low end of the economic spectrum. And you begin to organize them, and you get them to riot and smash windows, set buildings on fire, and create chaos. And out of this chaos, everybody begs for someone with strong leadership and power to restore order. And that's when you have this dictator comes in. So every socialist and communist country has a dictator. Stalin, Pol Pot, Ho Chi Minh, Castro, Mao Zedong, Kim Jong-un in North Korea, they are the head of gold. And their communist party members are the new royalty. They're the arms and chest of silver. They get to live in the nice houses and nice neighborhoods. And then the people are the abdomen of iron and bronze. And now we talked about Machiavelli. We talked about Hegel. And let's fast forward to Hitler. So we got the 1930s. And we have the Weimar Republic in Germany. And Hitler's voted in as chancellor by one vote. And he has a violent group, an Antifa-type group. It's called the Brown Shirts. They're nicknamed stormtroopers because they would storm into the meetings of Hitler's opponents and shout down the speaker, totally disrupt the meeting. And then they would lock arms and block access to buildings and block streets. Could you imagine people locking arms and blocking streets? And then they went into the inner cities and smashed windows of 7,000 Jewish businesses. It's called the Night of Broken Glass, the Kristallnacht. And then they set the Capitol building on fire, the Reichstag. And in this total confusion of this violent group going into cities and creating this havoc, Hitler rounds up his political opponents and has them shot without a trial. And then Hitler has all of his brown shirts killed in the Night of the Long Knives. And then everybody praises Hitler for restoring order and getting rid of this violent group that's disrupting everything. And everybody's happy for a short time until they realize they just surrendered their republic, where the people are in charge, to a Führer dictator, Hitler.
Well, it sounds like today the rise, what did you call them, the agent provocateurs, Saul Alinsky, Barack Obama, community organizers, very contemporary.
It's a workable strategy. Now, World War II is over, and Britain, France, Germany give independence to their former colonies. And these colonies are now brand new countries with their brand new leaders, and it's all happy. Until the Soviet Union decides it wants to make these countries satellites of the Soviet Union. So they would send in KGB agents into Romania, into Hungary, into Poland, Syria, into these countries, and they would do what? Identify people groups with grievances. Maybe they were racially discriminated against, or they're the low end of the economic spectrum, and they would organize them to protest and riot and smash buildings and tear down statues, and then they would co-opt the media through bribes and threats to blame the leader for the problem. And then they would cultivate weak links in the military. And when the public fervor got so bad, they would do a coup and arrest the leader or do a rigged election and install a Soviet puppet. And the rioting would stop and everybody would be happy for a moment until they realized they just gave away the farm. And they're now condemned to a totalitarian government. Now, Truman did nothing while the Soviet Union was doing these tactics because he thought his United Nations was going to bring world peace. But Eisenhower is the new president, and Iran has a leader that's siding with the Soviet Union. His name is Mossadegh. And Mossadegh nationalizes the Iranian oil industry. You think, what's that? Well, 1908, the British, they switched from coal to oil in their navy, and they needed oil. So in 1908, they start a company called the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. You know it better as BP. And when Iran nationalizes, takes away BP, the British have no oil. And so they go to Eisenhower, and he approves the first CIA operation to overthrow a country's leader. It's called Operation Ajax. And the operative on the ground for the CIA is Kermit Roosevelt Jr. He is the grandson of Teddy Roosevelt. And what does he do? He goes into Tehran, recruits the most feared mobsters and criminals. He gets the radical imams. He recruits them. They stage protests. They stage riots. They attack mosques. And they bribe and threaten the media to blame Mossadegh for all the problems. And then they nurture relationships with weak links in the military, and they put Mossadegh under house arrest, lock him away for the rest of his life till he dies, and then they install the Shah, who loved America. And we did the same thing in the Congo in 1960, Guatemala in 1954, Dominican Republic, even Chile 1973. Well, the KGB didn't sit back, and there's photos of Brezhnev hugging Yasser Arafat and starting the PLO, and Brezhnev hugging Castro and helping to take over Cuba. And then the KGB are doing the same thing. It's the subject of every spy novel, right? You go to a third world country, what do you run into? The Russians, the KGB, and the CIA. What are they doing? An assassination. The only difference this time around is it's happening on our own soil. You have these planned riots with pallets of bricks dropped off. Somebody's orchestrating this.
It's obvious that there's, you know, I'm thinking of the pallets of bricks, and then some of the people interviewed, there's a lot of stuff on YouTube, they mentioned George Soros. They say, oh, he's paying us big, $250 for a pallet of bricks. Somebody hates us, and somebody's trying to pull us down.
Right. We already know there are people in the Department of Justice, CIA, FBI, that do not like our president, and they have been trying. Through the FISA-Russia collusion, Steele dossier, they've been trying to get rid of this president. And this is just another one of their tactics that they've been doing for 70 years in other countries. And I lived, 30 miles from Ferguson. I was in St. Louis and spoke in Ferguson several times. 99% of the people rioting at Ferguson were not from Ferguson. They were brought in by Moore, Missourians Organizing for Reform and Empowerment. And Moore got $33 million from George Soros. And they had their training session in inner city churches on how to lock arms and block highways. even trained them how to give emotional speeches in front of the camera. Oh, we were just protesting, and this car came up, and they were terrible. They would tell them, your audience is the country, not the person in front of you. And they were promised $5,000 apiece for rioting, and they didn't get paid right away. So they went to the Moore headquarters, and they rioted and took over the headquarters and started a hashtag cut the check campaign. It was talked about locally on the news. It was also the city council mentioned it. And then they hurried up and paid them off before the story went national. It was a rent-a-mob. They moved the same people to Baltimore, to Milwaukee, to Charlotte, North Carolina. And it was this idea that you create this crisis, and it was would be an excuse for the previous president to use his Department of Justice to take over all these different cities. It's a workable strategy. And what we're seeing today has all the fingerprints that somebody is orchestrating this, finding groups with grievances, stirring them up. And all this stuff is in the book, Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present. It's a real eye-opening book, and I think people will just really appreciate it.
It really is, and the topic is so important, and you've investigated all the important angles. Thank you for being on the show. Friends, Bill Federer will be back with us for another show. His new book is available. Our announcer, Matthew, will come and tell you how to get the book on socialism.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. We have a great offer for our listeners today. First of all, we have the new book titled Socialism, the Real History. You can have a copy for a gift of $25 if you live in the United States and $45 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our call center at 1-800-652-1144. If you would rather write and place your order, the address is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And you can order this book and all of our products and materials on our website at swrc.com. We also have the book, Quick Answers to Social Issues. You can have a copy for a gift of $15. And we have the DVD that goes with that, titled Quick Answers to Tough Questions. Yours for a gift of $10. Our very special offer is to get all three items I mentioned. The new book titled Socialism, the Real History, the book Quick Answers to Social Issues, and the DVD titled Quick Answers to Tough Questions for a gift of $35. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. The address to write is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And the website is swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
Should man play God? Can we improve the human species so that we are not susceptible to COVID-19? Some would affirm that we already have the technology to do so. So why not?
Recently, the world learned that the researchers at London's Francis Crick Institute use CRISPR technology to genetically edit 18 embryos. Around half of the embryos suffered the kinds of major mutations and genetic damage that could lead to birth defects and life-shortening medical problems. The horrifying results led one gene editing expert to call for, quote, a restraining order for all genome editors to stay the living daylights away from embryo editing, close quotes.
Unfortunately, the desire to play God with the human genome is not easily discouraged. Some scientists are thrilled with the possibilities and seem to be ignoring the risks. Quote, from gene editing to brain-computer interfaces, our ability to engineer biological systems will redefine our species and its relation to all other species on the planet. And COVID-19 is accelerating the process, close quotes. But one must ask, can they accidentally create a monster? Might they redefine the human species in a way that opens a door to unimaginable horrors?
These adventurous geneticists are on a kick to recreate humanity. They write, quote, our ability to manipulate RNA and DNA, bacteria, viruses, algae, and fungi give us the power to engineer life. We can prevent a future COVID-19 lockdown, close quotes. Imagine the day, they warn, when our great-grandchild sues her parents for not genetically engineering her to protect her from inheritable diseases or even failing to enhance her in order to compete effectively, close quotes.
These neurobiological saviors with supposed godlike abilities know that a few eggs have to be broken in order to make an omelet. That's why the report did not mention what happened at the Crick Institute and only offered a passing reference to the risk of unintended consequences and a backlash from parents, consumers, regulations, religious groups, and more. According to the worldview of scientism, unleashing dangerous mutations on the human genome isn't the real crime. The real crime, allegedly, is standing in the way of so-called progress.
With so much at stake, distinctively Christian voices are needed in the sciences right now, perhaps more than ever.
Yes, courageous consumers must refuse any and all so-called breakthroughs or conveniences built upon human rights abuses. Courageous pastors and teachers must clarify for all the faithful the moral stakes of our technologies, especially when it comes to genetics and human reproduction. And may God give us a new generation of scientists who love God and want to discover His creation and who can lead these fields of studies in ways that honor God and protect those vulnerable image bearers among us.
We have all watched the unfolding saga of Seattle, with socialist communist radicals establishing a would-be nation within a city. Police there are an endangered species, and now one of the city council members is coming out of the insurrectionist closet. According to a July 10th report from the website Gateway Pundit, communist Seattle City Council member Kashama Sawant gave a victory speech Tuesday night after a passage by the city council of the so-called Amazon tax, in which she vowed to overthrow the United States, replacing the government and society with a socialist world. Sawant is 46 and immigrated from India as an adult with a 1994 B.S. in computer science from the University of Mumbai. Sawant earned a Ph.D. in economics from North Carolina State University and became a citizen of the U.S. in 2010. She served in the Seattle City Council since 2014. Let's hear her own words from the close of her speech. Quote, "We are coming to dismantle this deeply oppressive, racist, sexist, violent, utterly bankrupt system of capitalism, this police state. We cannot and will not stop until we overthrow it and replace it with a world based instead on solidarity, genuine democracy, and equality, a socialist world." Earlier, she said, "I have a message for Jeff Bezos and his class." He's the owner of Amazon. "We are preparing the ground for a different kind of society. And if you, Jeff Bezos, want to drive that process forward by lashing out against us in our modest demands, then so be it. Because we are coming for you and your rotten system." End of quote. She's pressing for a massive tax against Amazon, supposedly to expand affordable housing. Here are a few more quotes from her speech. See if you catch the flavor. "Today's vote to pass the Amazon tax in Seattle is a historic victory for working people. By a movement that wouldn't give up, we are winning because of the determination of workers and socialists led by my organization, Socialist Alternative, and progressive organizations and unions. The Amazon tax is perhaps the biggest progressive win in Seattle since socialists and labor unions led the way on the $15 minimum wage, which passed first here and then was won in cities and states around the country. We must build on our momentum. The movement to tax Amazon and big business to fund housing and essential services is needed everywhere, and we must actively spread it. Here in Seattle, we will need to immediately take this energy toward winning the release of all arrested protesters without charges and to defund Seattle police by at least 50%. We know that our power comes from working people getting organized, not from any negotiation with the elite, because class struggle is what gets the goods. Internationally, the working class needs to take the top 500 corporations into democratic public ownership run by workers in the interests of human need and the environment, not billionaire greed. We are fighting for far more than this tax. We are preparing the ground for a different kind of society. End of quote. Any student of history knows where socialism has taken the people oppressed by it in the past. Freedom will not be part of the result that Sawant is seeking. Romans 6:18 tells us where we can find true freedom. Being then made free from sin, ye became the servants of righteousness.
Excellent program, gentlemen. If you would like to order our special offer, just call us at 1-800-652-1144. If you have a prayer request or a Bible question and you prefer to write, the address is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And visit us online at swrc.com.
Perhaps this is the first time you have heard this program. Maybe you've listened for a while and you like this program and look forward to it, but have never called or written in. We invite you to do that today. In fact, for those that call or write today and say, "Jesus is Lord, please send me the DVD," we will send you a complimentary DVD of our TV show we call The Journey. If you like the radio program, wait till you see the video version. It was banned by some TV stations as being too controversial. Since when did the truth become controversial? The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. When we offer an item for $30, we do not get to keep $30. We have to purchase these items we offer, which cost us about half of that. Then we have to pay the radio stations to play our program. We know you can get these items we offer cheaper at someplace else. But the little money we do get to keep goes for purchasing new items, paying radio stations, and all the rest that keeps this ministry on the air. So when you look for a cheaper price online, remember the great program you just heard and say to yourself, "I'll support Southwest Radio Church because I enjoy their messages on Bible prophecy and Bible teaching."
Thank you for being with us today. Join us tomorrow when Pastor Larry and Bill Federer wrap up this series on the Watchmen on the Wall program from Southwest Radio Church.